My name is Valerie Payne, and this is the podcast Binding Unity. I started this podcast because of a personal experience that helped me to see the need for unity in our society right now. I hope that you will come along with me on my quest to find unity as we seek understanding, connection, healing, and love. Hi, this is Valerie Payne, and you're listening to another episode of Finding Unity. And today we have Emily Silva on. Emily, thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Do you want to just talk a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background, and what led you to becoming a therapist? And then we'll talk a little bit about your specialty.
All right. So I am a licensed clinical social worker, which means I have a master's degree in social work with an emphasis on clinical work. And so I do therapy for patients and counseling and that kind of stuff. And so I got both my bachelor's and master's in social work, and I got into it. It all started kind of in high school, actually. So there was a family that lived in my neighborhood, and the mom had major depressive disorder. And all of her kids had ADHD, and she was overwhelmed trying to manage them. And so I'd go over to their house every day after school in high school and tutor the kids, and while to just help her out because she was struggling so much. And so after that, when I started college, I was an English major at first, actually, but then it wasn't feeling right. And so I looked at other options, and I saw social work and just trying to figure out how to help people, and it clicked perfectly. And I just thought back of that family and how I enjoyed helping them so much, and so wanted to make a career out of it. And so that kind of led me in that direction. So
that's awesome. Yeah. It's a great field.
It is a great field.
Do you want to talk about a little bit about what you do now and what led you to that? Okay. Specifically,
so right now I work for a medical group, Intermountain Healthcare, and I'm in what's called the mental health integration program. So they have me go to different clinics every day. So family practice, and then 3 days a week, I'm at an OBGYN clinic. And they have the doctors who meet with patients, and they see that the patients have mental health needs. They'll refer them to me to do some assessments, consultations, as well as some short-term therapy with them. And so I specialize in maternal mental health. And so hence why I'm in the OBGYN clinics. And so, and it's been an amazing experience. I'm right now, I think I'm the only one in Utah Valley for Intermountain that's working in OBGYN clinics in this
Wow.
valley.
So do you feel like there's a high need there? Like, do you feel like you're pretty busy being
Yes.
the only one?
Okay. Yeah, there's Yeah. definitely a high need. There's other clinics around here that specialize in maternal mental health too that I've connected with. But yeah, there's a lot of MHI providers in other counties that work in OBGYN clinics too. But yeah, Utah County has a lot of moms. So yeah. It's it's yeah. a need here that they're seeing, which is
yeah.
great.
Well, I'm really excited to dive into this and to talk yeah. about it and dispel some myths and just be able to bring more education to people who are listening, maybe people who are experiencing it. So first of all, can you tell us just a little bit about how common it is for a woman to experience postpartum?
Yeah, so they talk about the national average, about 1 in 7 moms when in the first 3 months put in the postpartum period will develop symptoms of anxiety or depression. And then if followed longer, it goes up to 1 in 5. And so it's pretty common, and it's more common than a lot of people think because a lot of times women are afraid and shy to talk about it. Yeah. And so this is, so not many people report it, but these are our kind of findings in research and study. So it's pretty common, and a lot of, and a lot of things influence it, and a lot of, because moms blame themselves, hence why they don't want to talk about it mm. all the time, or they think they're the only ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, and a lot of times it's more than just depression too. It can be anxiety or PTSD or OCD or anger or those kinds of things. So it's not just, I want to hurt myself or my baby. It's a lot more expansive than that.
Yeah. Can you actually, you mentioned anxiety, depression, other symptoms, but what are some symptoms of postpartum
where maybe someone listening, maybe they're confused about, no, it's just an anxiety period I'm going through. Can you talk a little bit about what the symptoms look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of it too is some women think it's just the baby blues, because that's a fairly common thing that happens to about 70% of all moms experience baby blues, which is in the first 2 weeks postpartum. It's a biological thing. Your hormones drop significantly after delivering a baby, and so you'll have some of these symptoms of feeling overwhelmed, tearful, that kind of stuff. But it only lasts, it doesn't last more than 2 weeks, and it's pretty mild symptoms and everything like that. And so some women think that's what they're, oh, I'm just going through baby blues, or oh, yeah, I'm just tired, or sleep deprived, which is all true. but then a lot of times when it's depression, to recognize it's to kind of actually depression is if you're having more bad days than good days. And also a common thing that I hear a lot of moms tell me, pretty much every one of them will say, I just don't feel like myself mm-hmm. anymore. And a lot of it is just so constant with depression. It's constant gloom, feeling overwhelmed, no motivation, rest doesn't help. They're getting irritable. And a lot of guilt with moms, especially postpartum depression. Moms feel a lot of guilt, and feeling down on themselves and like they're not good enough. And sometimes they can even have thoughts of my family would be better off without me, or wanting to escape all the time, or that kind of stuff. And so it's kind of some of the typical symptoms of regular depression, but then there's some of these things like the overwhelmed and the guilt that are more common with the postpartum population as well.
So when you mention guilt, I'm just curious, what does that look like specifically? Is it them feeling guilty for not having energy? Or I'm just curious from your experience, what kinds, not that it's only these things, but mm-hmm. just curious some examples.
Yeah. So a lot of it, I talk about mom guilt is a real thing. And so it's them not feeling they're doing enough. They're always feeling like they're failing every day. They don't feel like they did enough that day. Or they're letting down their kids or their husband because they're not able to do everything that they wanted to do that day. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is the expectation of being the superwoman mom, to where you're supposed to be able to keep the house pristine and have all the kids perfectly tailored and looking great and doing great in school and looking great themselves and participating in all these community activities. It's just kind of that superwoman mentality. And when they don't feel like they can do that, they feel like they're failing in some ways. And so there's guilt with that, or even guilt of taking care of themselves. So when people suggest, hey, go get some sleep or go do something, away from the house, they'll feel guilty about doing that. And they feel like, well, I need to be at home with my kids. I need to do this. And so there's those kinds of guilty feelings as well as feeling guilty about the symptoms that they're feeling of if they're feeling sad or irritated with their baby or that kind of stuff. They have this deep guilt of like, oh, I should not be angry at my baby. I shouldn't feel so irritated or upset. I should be happy. There's a lot of shoulds that come along too of mm-hmm. what they should or shouldn't be doing. And so all of that kind of feeds that guilt.
I'm sure we'll dive into that a little bit more later. Just those negative thoughts. But so you've mentioned sleep deprivation is a real thing, mm-hmm. right? And so what I'm hearing you say is the biggest difference between maybe sleep deprivation or other just the adjustment of having a child is that you're having more like gloomy days than not. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, and more significant down days. And it's pretty consistent. Yes, there's going to be ups and downs, and that's why sometimes it's hard to catch too, because some with postpartum depression, you can have some good days occasionally. Mm-hmm. And so when we're like, oh, I'm fine. It was just, I had a rough day yesterday. And so they'll brush it off. And that kind of stuff. But a lot of times it's those, just kind of some of those persistent, things that it's just more bad days than good.
Yeah. Because you work in the healthcare system, by the time they come to you, have they run labs and everything to make sure there's not something else physically going on with them?
Usually. And if they haven't, I usually encourage them to, because a lot of times with in the postpartum period, I encourage them to check their thyroid as well as their iron levels, because those can be affected in that time period. And those influence fatigue as well as some depressive symptoms too. And so I usually encourage them to do some blood work a little bit too, just to make sure that everything physically is okay too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that makes sense. So kind of moving on, we've talked a little bit about what the symptoms look like. What are some things that you feel a family member or a friend maybe should know when they have a loved one who's experiencing postpartum?
I think the biggest thing is that being patient, under kind of helping them know that they've got support, and just trying to understand as much as possible, right? And supporting them. There's a practical support and the emotional support of, but also not trying to take over too much. And so it's kind of a balance of checking in with them of what they really do need. Because I've had a few patients come in and they're like, my family is amazing and they're supportive. They're doing everything though. And so I feel like I'm useless because I'm not doing anything. Or they're helping in ways that they don't really need help in, of coming, oh, here, I'll come and hold the baby, when what she really could have help with is just cleaning up the kitchen for her, you know, because she wants to have some time with her baby too.
Yeah.
And so doing some of those things of kind of that practical support and really checking in with her and seeing what she would like your help with.
I think that's the trickiest thing, is knowing how to help someone. Mm-hmm. You have to ask sometimes, because it's kind of like the love languages. Everyone's going to want something different, depending on what their love languages are or what they need. So do you want to, you mentioned a lot of should musts. Do you want that women have when they experience postpartum? What do you do to help women as they navigate and process these symptoms of postpartum?
And so I talk about, there's the, a lot of times I say there's the four pillars of treatment when it comes to postpartum, and something too, that they're actually starting to move away from, like, just postpartum depression as the title of, they're calling it perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, because like we were saying earlier, it can be just more than depression. That can be extreme anxiety or OCD or PTSD symptoms too. Mm-hmm. And actually I see a lot, if not on its own, at least combined with depression, anxiety is a huge, especially here in this valley, anxiety is probably one of the ones I see the most too. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when it comes to that four pillars of treatment I talk about, it's self-care, support, therapy, and then if needed, medications. And a lot of times with, when it comes to the therapy side of things, I like to educate them, because knowing what's going on helps significantly, and being able to openly talk about it also helps significantly, and be like, okay, this isn't just me. It's not because I wasn't meant to be a mom, or I am a bad mom, or that kind of thing. It's something that's happening to me that I'm experiencing. I'm going through these symptoms of a common disorder. And that in itself is kind of relieving to them to know what's going on and that there can be something to do about it. Mm-hmm. And so that education piece is big, as well as helping them access the support systems. Working on expectations has been huge too, when it comes to having realistic expectations for themselves and for their daily tasks, as well as for how they're supposed to be or how they want to be as a mom. So those are kind of important things too, of working with them on adjusting and making realistic expectations, and dismissing false myths, right, of motherhood and that kind of stuff, like that you have to be able to do it on your own, mm-hmm. and with a smile on your face, or that you'll connect with your baby the minute they are on your chest mm-hmm. after delivery. A lot of times it actually takes quite a bit before you actually attach with that child. But all you hear about is people like, oh, and the minute they were on, mm-hmm. you know, like that kind of stuff. And so then people who are like, well, I didn't feel that. Does that mean I'm messed up or something's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And so trying to dispel some of those myths is helpful too, just to help with that cognitive side of things, because yeah. they're believing these things and it's just making them feel worse and worse.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think a lot of those things you shared are really helpful. I hope they're helpful for people listening, just as far as some of those myths you dispelled. Maybe some people listening are like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. I thought it was supposed to be that way. You mentioned education is a huge piece of helping people. What are some things that you feel, and you've mentioned some of these things already, but just if there's anything else you want to add, things that you feel like women should know and do if they're recognizing these symptoms, and what are the first steps they should take?
I think the first thing is to talk to their family, be open to their husband, their family members about what they're experiencing, what they're going through. A lot of women have found just being that open and honest with like, hey, I'm struggling right now, and I'm feeling these things. It has just having that open and getting that support system behind her has been significantly helpful, as well as then going and talking with their OBGYN or their family doctor, even their pediatrician, about, hey, I'm experiencing these symptoms. And those doctors are typically very familiar with it and can point them in the right direction. Including me, or, you know, they know therapists in the community that specialize in this or can help them on the medication side of things if that's what they're looking for. And so that's a good step too, as well as, I always say starting with that self-care and support, because usually moms are not taking care of themselves. They're mm-hmm. putting themselves last.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different reasons for that, and it's understandable. There's even chemicals that support that, to where kind of the mama bear chemical a little bit, to where after they deliver, and so their kids are the number one, and they forget to also put themselves up there too. And so all engaging in self-care, working on trying to get a little bit more sleep, trying to get you know, you're not going to get the 8 hours of sleep. That's actually, you know, that's not possible for with a newborn, right? But trying to get some uninterrupted sleep that's a little bit more than an hour or two here, as well as getting out of the house and having some time, kid-free time, and those kinds of things is really important, just to amp up the self-care as well. And then if things are continue to struggle, or especially if they're having kind of thoughts about harming themselves, then especially going to a doctor and talking to them about treatment options.
Do you want to speak a little bit? You've talked about anxiety, depression, but you also mentioned OCD, PTSD, psychosis, some of these other aspects we don't really talk about. So do you want to speak a little bit to those and what those may look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for example, so OCD is one that can come during the postpartum period as well. And a lot of times it comes, what I've seen, because there's, you know, people talk about like the common things that they hear about when it comes to OCD is like excessive hand washing or cleaning or worried about germs, that kind of stuff. And with postpartum, yeah, it can be some of those things as well. But usually it's surrounding the safety of the baby. And having kind of some intrusive thoughts about danger coming to the baby, or images that come into their mind. And sometimes it's, I even had a mom once who was kind of having intrusive images of her accidentally smothering her baby and the baby dying. And so she was terrified to be around the baby whenever the baby was sleeping at night. And so she'd even have her mom go into the nursery and watch over the baby at night to make sure that she didn't walk in and smother her baby, right? Those kinds of things, because that image was so intense in her mind. Or another mom who had an intense thought of, or an image of her smashing her baby's head against the corner whenever she rounded a corner. So she wouldn't round a corner with the baby in her arms because she was afraid that that was going to happen. So it's those kinds of like really intrusive thoughts and even some sexual ones or that kind of stuff. And women are terrified to talk about them because they're like, they think that people are going to take their baby away because they're having thoughts about their baby falling down the stairs, you know, that kind of stuff. Or so, and so they think they're going crazy, but they recognize that it's not something they want to do. And usually they go into very excessive measures to make sure that that thing doesn't happen, but it terrifies them. And so that's kind of that some of those OCD things. And as well as, though, on the other hand, there's then psychosis, where they have delusions or hallucinations, to where they see someone else's face when they look at their baby, or they hear voices about negative things about the baby or themselves or that kind of stuff. And a lot of times they don't recognize that it's not an unhealthy thought. They think it's something that's real or something that they need to do. A common example is a woman in Texas drowned her babies because she thought that they were, that she needed to drown them to save their souls, because a devil was possessing them and her and that kind of stuff, right? And so it's kind of those situations. And usually, like with psychosis, our suggestion is hospitalization, typically, is the main treatment, just to get them stable on and safe on medications and that kind of thing. But OCD is we haven't really found any cases of women harming their babies with just those intrusive OCD thoughts. And also bipolar is something that can happen as well postpartum. And that's kind of, they have to have a manic episode, typically, where they don't, for a couple of weeks, they don't sleep hardly at all. They don't need any sleep. They're excessive energy. And a lot of times the women are like, I feel great, you know, but it's the family that is the ones like, she's a little scary, right? Very impulsive, very high energy. They're cleaning the house at 2 a.m. and it's spotless and that kind of stuff, right? So, and that lasts for a couple of weeks, and then that it's followed typically by some depression or that kind of stuff. And then also with PTSD, it can, even if I've seen PTSD even with women who've had what doctors would consider a normal delivery, right? To where, but it's a traumatic, trauma is in the eye of the beholder. And so if it was kind of traumatic for them, because it's, you know, birth isn't the prettiest thing in the world, right? And not the best feeling for these women. And so sometimes pregnancy, the delivery doesn't go as expected or planned. They have to have an emergency C-section or that kind of stuff. And those kinds of things, their child is whisked away to check on their respiratory or have to go to the NICU or that kind of stuff. And so moms can develop some PTSD from those situations because it was traumatic for them. And so then they can avoid going to the doctor anymore because it reminded them of that situation, or sometimes even avoid the baby because the baby reminds them of the pain that they experienced and that trauma they experienced, right? And so a lot, or they have dreams or nightmares or flashbacks of that whole experience, and it can be really traumatizing for them, especially, and some women who may have had issues with, had sexual abuse in the past or that kind of stuff. Pregnancy and delivery can re-trigger some of those traumatic incidences because that, you know, it's dealing with those sensitive parts of the body and that kind of stuff. And so sometimes we see that too, of even though women are like, I thought I was over this trauma that happened to me in the past, but they can be re-triggered through pregnancy and delivery too.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Just hearing how, you know, it really impacts so many different mental health areas, and to be aware of that. And hopefully people listening can be aware whether they've had a child or haven't, or if they have a loved one who's going through something. You mentioned a little bit about with psychosis, and you mentioned, you know, the treatment for that being hospitalization. Can you speak a little bit to tools maybe that you use in therapy, but then also maybe just tools and resources for people who are experiencing, you know, postpartum, what things may be helpful for them to hear or know?
Yeah. And so I think a big, you know, a big thing is trying to kind of talk about their different experiences with people, but also there's different therapies that are helpful with it. So there's a therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy that has been found to be very useful. And that's working on kind of addressing and managing the thoughts, because a lot it talks about how, you know, our thoughts influence how we react to situations. And so sometimes we have kind of unhelpful thoughts
that like come, the should must,
the should must, right? There's different and so of identifying those and tweaking them, working on those thoughts and having, you know, developing a little bit more helpful thinking process when it comes to that to help them, as well as different, like coping skills, because a lot of times a lot of these women have never experienced these kinds of symptoms before, and so the things they typically do to manage stressful days or that kind of stuff just don't cut it anymore. And so yeah, it's not enough anymore, and so they're like, now what do I do, because what I used to do isn't working when I've had a when I have a rough day, and every day is a rough day now. And so they have to experiment and find new things that can help them. Because even, especially for new moms, I see them struggling with finding coping skills that work with being a mom as well. Because sometimes they're like, well, I just leave and go for a 10-mile run or, you know, or something like that. Whereas like, I can't leave my baby lying there and go for a 10-mile run anymore, you know. And so they have to put a lot more thought and effort into some of those coping things as well. And so working with their spouse on developing, like, okay, what are some things that really I can do to cope? Because sometimes they're like, well, I just have to grin and bear it, you know, just suffer through it because I don't know what to do. And it's too tiring to think about anything to try to do to help me feel better. And so that's where sometimes bringing in the support and be like, okay, how can I maybe get some sleep? Because sleep has been, you know, they find is a huge aspect of that too. How can, you know, can my husband take a feeding at night so I can get a little uninterrupted sleep? Or find, you know, or is, you know, exercise really good for my mental health? Or making sure I'm eating really good. And so there's those kinds of aspects of finding some coping things that help, as well as some cognitive things, and interpersonal stuff too, to just help them, you know, relationships change. It's just a random side note, men can get some postpartum as well, yeah, right? So the dads can get some postpartum, because that whole transition into either having the first baby or having another one in the home changes the whole dynamic of the home. Mm-hmm. And sometimes parents will grieve the life they had pre-baby, yeah. Because they're like, oh, we can't just up and go to a movie. We have to like plan it weeks in advance now in order to find a babysitter and, you know, and see on night that we're not exhausted, yeah, and that kind of stuff. And so yeah, sometimes there's that, but still still doing those things, bringing some normalcy back into their life as well, and trying to get back to things that help them feel normal and like themselves as well.
Yeah. So what I heard you say, tell me if I'm missing anything, mm-hmm, is you mentioned coping skills, kind of figuring out new coping skills since there's a huge change. So you have to reevaluate that. Two, maybe a therapist who is trained in cognitive behavioral therapy, since that seems to be most effective. And then the third thing I heard you say was really just figuring out, you know, it's like that diagram, physical, emotional, mental, social, and I'll add spiritual, just making sure you have those areas of your life filled or being fulfilled in some way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Finding that, kind of that balance of being able to make sure that all of their needs are taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on again, yeah, Emily. I like to, you know, my podcast, We talk about finding unity through seeking understanding, healing, connection, and love. And so I just wanted to ask you, what does finding unity mean to you in regards to this area that we've been discussing or other mental health needs?
Mm-hmm. Just thinking about the postpartum and perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, I have seen a lot is that it's not an individual problem, right? It's something that affects the entire family. And so it's something that as it needs to, as people come to understand and learn about it. And I love being able to get the word out about it, because as more understanding and it becomes less of a hidden thing and something that's talked about all the time, then there's that full understanding of what's going on and what these women are experiencing, then the community can rally around them and support them, and then they can feel not so isolated and alone, and that can bring unity in the community together, and help for the individual and the family as well as the entire community.
I love that. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Really quick, do you have any resources or websites that people can go to?
Yes, one of the main ones that I use, so there's an organization actually called Postpartum Support International, and they have a Utah chapter as well, Postpartum Support Utah, and they have both have their own websites. The Postpartum Support International is postpartum.net, and then the Postpartum Support Utah is psiutah.org. Yes, .org. And so, and there they have amazing resources. There's community support groups, as well as they connect you to therapists who specialize in maternal mental health, and other different books and information and resources that are great. And so usually that's the first stop that I send people to get more information on this.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks again. Thanks so much.
You're
for being
welcome.
On.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Remember that it's okay to disagree. Unity comes when we can agree to disagree while still maintaining a love for one another. For more on unity, follow us on Instagram at finding.unity or on Twitter at finding_unity.